All right, let's get going. We have a lot to do this hour. David Icke has gotten up early for us all. Hello, David. Welcome back. How are you doing over there?
Morning, Jeff. Very good, mate. Yeah, it's the sun's just coming up. It's lovely.
Good job. Good job. I guess the biggest story of the group that we should jump on first, maybe, is another emblematic event of complete crushing of freedom of speech, freedom of expression, with this Tommy Robinson case. Anti-Islam Dutch journalist, politician, rather, Geert Wilders, he's come to Robinson's aid. He says, calling Robinson a freedom fighter, Wilders called on the UK, once a bastion of freedom of speech, to stop, quote, behaving like North Korea and Saudi Arabia and gagging its people, while Muslims are pampered, protected, and defended. What is this? Is this a big story over there, or is it big over here? And how important is it?
It's a big story in the sense of the alternative media. There were reporting restrictions on reporting the fact that he'd been arrested, etc., imposed by a judge. And
almost denoticed, I guess, huh?
Yeah, well, we have obviously contempt of court laws over here. And the allegation is that he was prejudicing a court case by filming the people involved live outside the
court. He never got a chance to do it, though. They grabbed him before he actually began to broadcast.
Well, he has admitted contempt of court now. I see in a story here on the BBC and running in other mainstream newspapers this morning, and has been jailed for a number of months.
13 months. 13
yeah.
months.
Yeah.
A year.
So that's where we are. But, you know, we'll have to see what the real background is, because obviously with the reporting restrictions thus far, we've only been able to see a very small part of it. But it'd be interesting to see what the bigger picture of this is. But well, that's the headline, bottom line at the moment.
Yeah, very good. All right. Well, it seems to be a hot item over here too. So I wanted to ask your opinion of it. All right. Now, the invasion, if that's what you can call it, over there. Looks like it over here, of Europe by Muslims, African blacks, and so forth, propagated quite a bit, apparently, with the money and energy of George Soros. Where are we in that? Is it still continuing? We don't see any stories over here about the raft full of people trying to get from Libya to Italy and Greece and so forth. We're not seeing that anymore. Has it stopped, and where is it right now?
Well, obviously, the movement of people continues. It doesn't seem to be as big as it once was, but we shouldn't read too much into that, because it does actually happen in tends to happen in waves at different times.
Yeah.
But the point of the whole thing is that the indigenous European population and those coming in as a result of this, what is called the migrant crisis, are both having their strings pulled by the same force. It's a long-planned operation to destabilize Europe in this way, and to have massive divide and rule between the indigenous population and the incoming population. And if you look around places like Sweden and Germany, that is, and others, that is clearly happening. I went many times to Sweden before this all began, and I've been since, and Sweden is not the same country. And it's no good people screaming bigot, racist, and all these tags that are put on people. But the fact is, I mean, you know, it may be the plan to move as we are into a post-vax society, but some of us prepare to stay with the facts. And Sweden is being absolutely transformed.
I've read horror stories about it. And
the point is, you know, it's a simple rule of thumb from my point of view. Mm-hmm. If you want to know what the agenda is, then look at those things that you are not allowed to discuss, you're not allowed to debate, and you're not allowed to have an alternative opinion on that. And you look around, look at the whole transgender explosion, look at the subject we're talking about now. You're not allowed to have an alternative opinion on it, even if that alternative opinion is based on facts. And, you know, we need to ask why it's happening. We need to ask all the time that simple question, why? Why is it happening? Who benefits from it? And again, you mentioned George Soros. Well, George Soros and his Open Society Foundations are fundamentally involved in this manipulation of the movement of people and the manipulation of European governments to allow it to happen. This is why he's faced such opposition in the country he was born in, Hungary, from the Prime Minister there, because they have understood what Soros is doing. And when you've got a situation, Jeff, where George Soros is reported now to have, over the years, including a more recent donation of $18 billion, to have contributed $32 billion to this Open Society Foundation network. With that sort of money, you're not talking about peripheral manipulation. You're talking about fundamental manipulation.
Totally.
And the same, of course, is happening in the United States through particularly the southern borders. You have to ask why it's happening and why there is this transformation of societies and countries going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's easy to blame those coming in. And some of them will be very unpleasant people, but a lot of them are simply looking for a better life.
They're also political pawns, are they not?
Yeah, political pawns. Exactly that. You see, if you start bombing countries across the Middle East and devastating those countries, then the populations affected by that are going to want to get the hell out of the place.
Right.
And you know, although the great majority of those migrants coming into Europe are economic migrants, the whole thing started, if you remember, on the basis of people fleeing conflict. That's how the whole thing was sold, and that's how the emotional started, because
that's
the
right.
Manipulation of emotion is the bottom line of how it's done. So, for instance, you had people initially in Germany, if you remember, the German people were on the platforms at the railway stations as the great flow of migrants came in after Merkel opened the door there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were clapping the migrants into Germany because of the emotional feeling of the terrible situation they perceive themselves to be in. But, of course, you cannot bring in that level of numbers into a country, people particularly of a different culture, which have to be somehow be integrated into the indigenous culture, people who can't speak the language, therefore find it very difficult to get employment. You cannot do that without creating enormous problems and enormous upheavals. And, of course, this was predictable. And
Planned, predictable, that was the intent, I think.
Yeah, that was the intent. People like Angela Merkel, you know, people ask the question, particularly in Germany, what was she doing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what she was doing was serving the agenda.
That's what
the whole thing is about. And so, you see, if you can get your target population divided and ruled and at war with itself, then it's much easier to change society as you want it changed. And, of course, the agenda for Europe through the European Union is to break up countries ultimately into regions and the end of sovereign nations, regional Europe under the, in effect, totalitarian
control. It's a merciless war on what we used to call nationalism.
Yeah, this totalitarian control by the bureaucrats in Brussels that control the European Union. That's the whole game. And you know, this is a whole interesting area. I did a video of it recently about fascism coming in under another name. And you mentioned nationalism there, and you know, there's this suggestion, this claim that we're having the rise of fascism and the far right in Europe as a result of this great immigration migrant crisis, where people obviously are looking for, many people are looking for a party that's going to say, well, we're going to stop these numbers coming in. But the real fascism actually is unfolding under the banner of anti-fascism. This is how it's being done. So, for instance, you have this so-called progressive mentality, which has completely hijacked the liberal left, and has hijacked the traditional working class left in Britain and elsewhere as well. And it's a progressive mentality, as they call it, I call it regressive, that is increasingly taken over the universities, taken over the colleges, etc. And it is railing against the rise of what it calls far-right nationalist parties in Europe, while actually acting in exactly the way the Nazis did in Germany, which is destroying the ability of people with an alternative opinion to them from actually communicating that opinion. So we're seeing all the censorship of the free flow of information on Facebook, on Google, on YouTube, etc., under the banner of this progressive mentality. This is where the so-called hate speech has come from, through this progressive mentality, which is being played like a stringed instrument by the powers that are really behind it. And so you have this whole wave, Antifa, another one, this whole wave of people who claim to be anti-fascist, who are operating in ways that fascists work. And so there is this claim about the rise of nationalist parties in Europe, and that's the focus, see the fascists. And if you turn around and look in the other direction, you see this anti-fascist fascism that's becoming more and more influential and more dominant in shutting down alternatives to the prevailing narrative. You know, it's been pointed out many, many times that the old traditional, if you like, liberal left in America, but I remember as a kid, you used to rail against the destruction of freedom of speech. Students at Berkeley used to go on marches demanding freedom of speech. Now they protest against it. And it's this fantastic upturn.
It is astonishing. It is.
It is an incredible inversion of what the so-called liberal left used to be, because it's been hijacked by this progressive mentality.
Inversion, perversion, it's all there, and then some. Speaking of Soros, strange guy's strange sometimes. He says some odd things. He said today, everything has gone wrong, and then warned of a major financial crisis coming soon. And then he says, the second Brexit referendum campaign will start in the next few days. He made that promise today, George Soros. And finally, in the Soros trilogy here, the EU facing major financial crisis, but I have a plan, says Georgie, to save Europe. Who the hell is this guy?
this is the whole point about Soros. Who the hell is this guy? He is a if you're talking about the deeper levels of the rabbit hole, he's a gopher, but he's a very influential gopher who serves his masters and gets enormous amounts of wealth as a result of it. There are lots of these people, And Soros is everywhere. Now, it's a very simple thing about Soros. If Soros wants it, the 1% want it. The controlling elite want it because he's a front man for them.
Uh-huh.
And the last thing they want is the breakup of the European Union, because it's part of this incessant centralization of power, increasingly in the hands of bureaucrats, not even elected people, to dictate to the lives of people all over Europe. Now, the plan, of course, with the EU is not to let countries go. It's to absorb more and more. And so they had a massive shock with the Brexit referendum for a simple reason. The people of Britain at last, had the opportunity to have their voice heard. You see, what's been happening more and more, and I've seen this decade after decade, is that the working class of Britain that supported the old traditional left has had no voice whatsoever. It's not had a voice, of course, through the right of center Conservative Party, but it's not had a voice either through the alleged left of center Labour Party, the traditional party of the urban working class in Britain, because particularly since Tony Blair, it was hijacked again by our version of this progressive mentality to the point where you really couldn't tell the difference between left and right. And it's, of course, if you look behind it, it's a one-party state anyway, like both sides of the Atlantic. But what the situation has been is that it's what I call the gimme vote. If you become a gimme vote, then it's over. You're not going to get any representation at all. And what I mean by that is that if you are a certain area of society, let's say the urban working class, then the Labour Party sees you as a gimme vote, because they say, well, who else are you going to vote for apart from us? So therefore, we don't have to look after the urban working class, because they're going to vote for us anyway. We've got to look and focus our attention and our rewards, if you like, for voting for us with those that we need to spin the difference between not being elected and being elected. And so decade after decade, this urban working class in Britain has been completely neglected. No matter who they voted for, their voice was never heard.
Oh, yeah. Abused, neglected, sure.
And then along came the Brexit referendum, which was a in-out simple choice, not having a political party involved to dilute the will of the people, if you like. And that's where it came from. But the gimme vote had been so taken for granted by then that it shocked the establishment that this referendum went the way it did. Now, of course, as I said, actually within an hour of the vote happening, this is just the start, because the establishment, the manipulative web, is not going to accept this. They're going to try to stop it, and that's what we're seeing now, as you've quoted there, with George Soros funding these groups to try to overturn it. This is the whole thing that's going on, and to overturn the will of the people. And what you have is many people in politics, in the political class, whether left, right, center, or whatever, who are behind this campaign to stop Brexit happening. And, you know, there is an elephant in the living room here. George Soros is described as the godfather of the left, because he massively funds these progressive groups and massively contributed to the takeover of the left of this progressive mentality. But then you've got people like Sheldon Adelson, who are described as the godfather of the right. You know, these people with vast amounts of money are playing the political system right against left and pushing the world in a particular direction. And the number of people involved at the core, even at the gopher level, where the money is handed out, is ridiculously few.
Yes. Isn't part of this whole campaign being waged on the bedrock of semantic war on the masses. They take these words and twist them and turn them and give them entirely new meaning, and act as if you ought to know what they're saying or you're dumb. I mean, this the term open society. All right, what does that mean? Nobody knows what that means, really. What's it mean? It sounds encouraging, open society. But we are really up against a very pervasive war on all of us, a semantic war. They'll take a word and they'll corrupt it. It no longer has meaning as it used to. This is a big problem because it therefore extends into completely bringing most people into a situation where reality is no longer easily brought into focus. They can't.
Well, this is the classic Orwellian manipulation of language and the inversion of language. So what does the Open Society Foundation mean? It means the Closed Society Foundation.
That's it. Black is white, up is down. You got it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what's the best way to run drugs without being suspected? Through an anti-drug agency. It's the same principle. And again, going back to what I said earlier, Jeff, about this anti-fascist fascism, this fascistic society is being ushered in under the banner of being anti-fascist. Again, another inversion of language. And so you have Antifa, anti-fascist, which operates in the way that the fascist troopers did in places like Germany. And we have to call this out because going alongside this manipulation of language and the inversion of language and labels is intimidating people not to call it out. So, for instance, if you say Sweden is a transformed society because of mass migration, then you are immediately a bigot or a racist according to this progressive reflex action, emotional-based progressive mentality, when actually all you're doing is speaking the truth. These are facts. But the reason that these areas that are core agenda are not allowed to be debated in a factual way is because if we had open debate, never mind open society, if we had open debate on these subjects, then facts would come out that would actually challenge the direction that we're going in. And so we are now looking at a situation where the society that I grew up in and you grew up in is disappearing so fast because of this progressive mentality getting hold of the
amazingly fast
the power centers, not least through the money of George Soros. And so in one sense you see Soros that is pushing this progressive agenda. You see people like Sheldon Adelson who seem to be pushing against
they're both operating to the same
agenda.
Precisely. Yes. Okay. How Hungary seems to be a light to much of Europe that realizes it has been screwed. Viktor Orban, I guess Poland to a degree. How tough is Hungary? How big a role is Hungary going to play against this this complete subversion of Europe?
Well, I was in Hungary last year, and almost wherever you go were big posters, like big advertising posters, with Soros's face on it, and the text exposing what he was doing.
And right.
You see, this has been put out by the Orban government that has very publicly exposed the Soros agenda to again open the doors of Hungary to massive immigration that of another culture.
Massive third world immigration, and let's call it like it is. Their religion forbids them from assimilating. Their culture doesn't want anything to do with any kind of original assimilation in any fashion. When Soros pulled out of Hungary recently, He started yelling again about the hate campaign against him. They all play the victim. It's always, I'm a victim. If it serves their purpose, they're an instant victim. And that always bothers me when I see this. It happens
well,
all the time.
You look at people in tanks in Israel, and they are the victims, and people throwing the stones in the street are the terrorists. So mentality is, again, an inversion. It's an inversion of reality where the true victim is the opposite of the one that claims to be. But the thing about Orban is that he was reelected quite recently with a big majority, and that gives him a lot of power within the country to stand up to what is happening, because of course he's under tremendous pressure too from the European Union that want to force quotas on Hungary, and he's resisting that as well, because it's just quite blatantly obvious what's happening. Anybody wants to open their mind and look. The idea is to transform European society and create divide and rule and conflict on the back of that. And we should also all remember that, the incoming migrants, the great majority of them, are just as much victims of this manipulation as the incoming population. And while, a lot of a great number of Muslims do not want to integrate, some do. It's not completely black and white. No. The point is you've got two groups of people who are coming from different cultural standpoints who are being fused together for the benefit of a tiny elite that's actually behind it all.
How successful is this fusion?
Well, when I say fusion, I mean coming together of two cultures. An enormous amount of it's not fusing at all in that sense of the word fusion.
Right.
As we've seen in Sweden, you've got a ghetto situation. And, this is the other point, too, and you see this with MS-13 in America, it's the migrant population that massively being subjected to the imposition of migrant gangs that are forming in places like Germany and Sweden, criminal gangs. It's the migrant population that are
coming from their own ranks.
That are most actually targeted by these people. Yeah. I mean, who's targeted most by the triad groups out of China? It's Chinese people in the various countries, and so it's not black and white. It's about mentality, and the mentality of these gangs that are forming in Europe and in America.
And the gangs are running
anything
drugs,
goes,
prostitutes,
anything goes,
child
yeah.
sex, you name it. Yeah, anything goes.
But the other point is this, and this is a reason why the Labour Party in Britain ignored its gimme vote and the wishes of its gimme vote, is because if you're a political party, say the Democrats in America, the Labour Party in Britain, and the migrant vote overwhelmingly goes to you, then the more migration, the more votes you perceive yourself to be going to get. I'm sure this is a major motivation of the Democratic Party in its open border policy. And we've just had this story out of Scotland where the Scottish National Party is proposing to give asylum seekers and those waiting to get citizenship, to give them the vote. And, of course, the SNP is doing that on the basis of its perception that they will almost certainly, in the great majority of numbers, vote for the SNP. So there are political motivations in all this as well, even on the party political level, which is nowhere near the real level of where this manipulation is coming from. So there are many, many aspects to this. But dividing and ruling and bringing disharmony to societies, because it's so easy to manipulate chaos as opposed to harmony, is the bottom line of all of it.
Have you ever seen more chaos in your lifetime across the board? I'm talking about everything from language to cultural assimilation, which isn't going to happen in many cases. They've got it. Divide and rule? Oh, they've got chaos. I don't know how successful they're going to be in the long run, but they've got it right now.
Yeah, but this is another whole big point. You control people by their focus of attention. And if they're focused on something, they're not seeing something else. And the more chaos and the more upheaval that you can get people to focus on, the less they will lift their heads up and look in the direction of Silicon Valley and what's going on there in terms of data accumulation on behalf of the Pentagon and the intelligence network.
Data accumulation, the likes of which you and I can imagine better than most, but even that, it is so post-Orwellian. It's amazing.
Yes, exactly. You've got the global censorship of information now is massively focused on Silicon Valley. And you've got the connect the human mind to AI agenda coming out of Silicon Valley. So there's a big question here. Who controls Silicon Valley? I absolutely say that it is the Pentagon through organizations like DARPA, the technological development arm, and it's the NSA, CIA network that is actually driving Silicon Valley. Now, while that agenda, the agenda to actually replace the human mind and human consciousness with artificial intelligence, the ultimate fascistic takeover, while that's going on day after day after day, of course, there's all these diversions that we've been talking about that are diverting people's attention away from that. And that's all part of this as well, getting people to look one way where the real core of this human takeover, artificial intelligence and its development and connection to the human mind, is going on day after day, hour after hour after hour. And it's very important that while we look at things like the topics we've been talking about, we don't so focus our attention that we lose peripheral vision, because it's in the peripheral vision where all the dots connect. And while these things need addressing and they're important, we should also look at what that focus is diverting people from. I mean, you know, you mentioned Tommy Robinson, for instance, and the people around him. Mm. I mean, you know, they're focused on one thing, and you know that's their choice. But I don't hear them talking about connecting the human mind to AI in Silicon Valley, which is the real takeover that's unfolding before our eyes.
It's completely out of the news, David, over here. Completely. No one talks about it.
Exactly. What does no one talk about? What are you not allowed to talk about without facing abuse? Answer those two questions and you see what the real agenda is.
This whole issue, years and years ago, you came up with the Hegelian dialectic that you brilliantly retitled Problem, Reaction, Solution. Problem, Reaction, Solution. Have we learned anything, or is this still the primary means of getting the sheep to respond? Problem, Reaction, Solution.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's two techniques. Problem, Reaction, Solution. Create the problem, get the reaction, do something, then offer the solution to the problem you've created. And alongside that, something I call the totalitarian tiptoe, which is you start at A, you know you're going to Z, but you know that if you go there in too big a leap, then people are going to look up because society's changing so fast and say, what's going on? So you go as in big a leap as you can from A to Z, but not too big that you alert too many people. However, what is happening now, again, not the majority, but in my experience, vastly more than ever before, is this process of problem, reaction, solution is starting to get through to more and more and more people. Again, not the majority. And we're so far along the road of the totalitarian tiptoe that if people just turn and look back and see where we've come and see how the steps that were so told to us in isolation are all connected, then again, people in larger numbers than ever before are starting to see how this works. I mean, I've been on a and continuing to be on an evening speaking tour, which because it's an evening and not all day like the ones I used to do are, you get a lot more people come who are curious, who are interested, who won't give it a day, but they'll give it 4 hours. And I've seen on this speaking tour enormous change in the kind of people that are looking at this information, people that would have, you know, put their hand out and rejected it by reflex action before. So there are some very, very good things happening.
That's a good sign.
Of course, it's not the majority yet, or even nearly the majority, but, you know, you've been on this road a long time, so have I. And it's very encouraging to me today when I see the numbers who are seeing it rather than the numbers that were seeing it when we started out.
Very good. I like the idea of a four-hour talk, or the all-day thing. That was what a Herculean amount of strength that took for you. Anybody to put that much incredibly intense information out. Now you got 4 hours. I think you're going to draw a whole different group. That's very smart.
That's actually happening. And if people want to see the all day, they of 10 hours, they could go to davidicke.com and there it is. But I have seen a difference, and I have seen lights go on. You see, there's more and more and more people who are coming to the events with a friend who knows something about what I'm saying, but actually their friend knows nothing. And to see the light go on in four hours, in fact, less than that, with
that
people who
really
are completely new to the information, where they see how the world is manipulated and how it's possible to manipulate it.
Yeah.
And it is extremely encouraging. And, of course, this is one of the key reasons that we're having this massive censorship of the free flow of information, while YouTube channels are being taken down and Facebook and all these Google and censoring the alternatives to the narrative, is because they can see it is having an effect in the number of people that are seeing the world differently now.
Right, exactly. You said earlier, we're living in a post-fact world. This, of course, is being designed and mass marketed, if not impregnated, into the consciousness of the Western world. A post-fact world. This goes back to what I said about semantics. It also goes even further, not tangentially, but directly, into the culture of the lie. We now live in the culture of the lie. Our younger people lie. They expect to be lied to. Therefore, they lie with no conscience, no qualms. I'm not talking about all of them, and you know that. You people listening out there get it. This is a sad thing to see, though, when no longer... Remember when you were a kid, David, if you told a little white lie, you kind of felt bad about it. And your parents probably told you that wasn't a good thing to do. No more. Now it's wholesale lying all the time. And no accountability whatsoever for any of it. So there's that. So we got some real problems here that are culturally not going to be able to be reversed in a fortnight. This is going to take time.
Well, I think one of the key things in this area, Jeff, is that when you lie and you're in a post-fact society where facts are the anchor, facts are the anchor to show whether something's true or not. And once you go into a post-fact society, people get so confused they're lying with not even realizing they're lying. Because the whole basis of what is perceived to be true and not true is increasingly not mental, it's emotional. You look at the progressive mentality and its reactions, they're all emotional. You look at the takeover of this mentality in the universities and the colleges, the reaction is emotional.
Well said. No more intellect. Well said.
I've seen people, students, for instance, being interviewed about a protest that they're involved in. We're against this, we're against that, and all that stuff. And when they're questioned on the detail of the subject they're protesting about, they are no idea. It is pure emotion. And it's also something else. It's pure virtue signaling. Instead of standing up for what you believe, even if it's against the grain, you instead want to virtue signal. You want to say, look how good I am, how nice I am, how lovely I am, how perfect I am. And to do that within the environment you're operating in, you have to agree with the prevailing narrative. So if you are of the progressive mentality, you virtue signal by repeating
the mantra.
The mantra. You meet resistance if you challenge it, and people are not only more and more becoming intimidated to repeat the mantra, they're becoming so absorbed by it that they actually believe it and repeat it from a point of view of, yes, it's true, because they have no factual foundation to challenge what they are told is true. So, I mean, this is my view, for instance, and this is how the progressive mentality works. It works by seeing everything in black and white, literally, actually, in many cases. So you show me any group of people of any race, culture, and background, and I'll show you nice people, I'll show you okay people, and I'll show you deeply psychopathic people. So that is what intelligent, fact-based people do. They don't look at the race, they don't look at the religion, they look at the behavior of individual people within that group, and they make their judgments on that basis. Instead, the progressive mentality does not do individual breakdown of people's behavior. It just does groups. For instance, the white male now, as a group, is labeled bad by this progressive mentality by reflex action. You know, and I see this movement for the white people, for instance, to have to give reparations for what has happened in the past.
Oh, God,
and my point is this: hold on a minute. You just got the sequence right. In the past, the people you're targeting now and calling out and abusing just because they are white, for instance, a white male, they didn't actually do what you are saying they should apologize for, because we are consciousness having an experience through bodies of different racial types. But it's the mentality that matters. And so people are being abused now who would not dream of doing what they are told they should feel guilty about, but you must still feel guilty about it anyway. It's nonsense. We have to look at individual behavior and recognize the fact that you don't have to be white to be racist, for instance. It's a mentality. It's not a color. And start to break down and have some maturity and have some intelligence and look at individual behavior. Because if you don't do that, then you are guilty of the very same racism that you are railing against in terms of other areas of society. We've got to start growing up. But the idea, of course, and this is the whole foundation of the manipulation of the young, is to stop them growing up, to stop them maturing.
Arrested development. Absolutely.
Exactly. And this is what the education system is has been transformed into. The education system, which in America came out of the Rockefeller family massively, has always been a programming operation. But now we've got into levels of extreme where it is a massive psychological programming operation, which is creating, you've used the phrase, forms of arrested development, a lack of emotional maturity as well as mental maturity, and it's being done systematically. And that's why I really do hold my hand up big time to young people today who have been through this, this psychological targeting, which through the use of technology is greater than it's ever been, and they've still seen through it. That's the confirmation of the power of consciousness over programming. Only people would become conscious beyond the program, then you see it. The idea of the education system is to start the programming at the earliest possible age and have it unceasing
preschool
from cradle to grave.
Preschool. And I also submit it is now pre-cradle to grave. I think it begins now in pregnancy on a variety of levels. I mean, we could go into the whole issue of electromagnetic frequencies and mind control and all the rest that the unborn child is hearing and reacting to. And then we can go into GMOs and the death liquid called aspartame, which, my God, is actually preserving the human body with formaldehyde. And these parents with unborn children have not only the greatest opportunity for joy and contribution to our species on this planet, but they also have certainly the chance to screw up big time and harm the unborn and destroy a child's life before the child has a chance. It's sad to me.
Well, the human body, brain and human body, is a processor of information. As with a computer, you can change the way that it processes information, and deep in the rabbit hole, they understand how to do this. And so when you're looking at GMO, you're looking at additives in food and water, you're looking at the massive increase in electromagnetic pollution.
5G is coming, David, as you know.
5G is an extraordinarily important subject. Then what you're doing is you are manipulating the energetic information fields of the body that process information, and you're changing the way they process information.
Right.
For instance, the mobile phones and what are coming off them, the smartphones, they are changing the way the brain processes information. This is why the attention spans of people have actually plummeted. And if you plummet attention spans, then you're not getting people to focus on substance, because they can't focus concentrate long enough to get into substance. And you are, again, adding to this post-fact society, because people will not concentrate on something for long enough to actually absorb the facts.
They cannot any longer be proactive about life when they fall into that trap. They react. They become reactive, not proactive. If you can't synthesize and utilize new thought, new information, if you can't, excuse me, connect the dots, you don't have a chance anymore. It's virtually impossible.
Well, you look at the progressive mentality that we've been talking about. What is it? It's completely and utterly reactive. That's all
right.
It does.
That's right.
It's an emotional reaction followed by another emotional reaction, another emotional reaction based on no fact, based on no foundation of substance, just emotional reaction.
Yeah.
That's where we've got with so many young people. Now, why young people? Because, and children, because they are meant to be the adults when the full-blown technological control system grid society comes in. And again, you know, this whole transgender explosion, which again you're not allowed to talk about or have another opinion about, is all part of this movement towards the no gender synthetic human. This was talked about by Aldous Huxley in Brave New World, for instance, where the synthetic human doesn't procreate but is produced in laboratory means according to various castes that indicate
caste. That's a key word, David. Just brought out castes. That's what's coming. This is going to be a caste world. Yes.
Where in the end, synthetic humans are created according to their caste. In other words, their contribution robotically, slave-like, to society. And because this is a no-gender human, this is what this explosion of transgender is all about. Because going from the gender, male-female human, to the no-gender human is a heck of a leap. So what you do is you fuse the perception, the psychological perception of gender, you fuse the gender so you combine it, and that's what we're seeing now, and then once you've combined it and fused and diluted the male-female perception of gender, then you move to the next stage, the stage you were going to all along, which is no gender at all.
No gender at all. David,
this is what it's about. And of course, if you could openly talk about this in the mainstream, then people might have another fix on what's going on. But of course, if it's the agenda, you must not allow people to openly debate it. Otherwise, too much information about it is circulating.
All I can say is we're out of time. And if you have a chance to go see David Icke, 4 hours, go. Take everybody you can talk into it. Challenge them. And go. And let me know where you're going to be. If you've got a schedule, I'll put it up. This is one of the few things that we have that people can actually go to and place their confidence and trust. And that's you. And we greatly appreciate everything you've done, as always.
Yeah, so, you too, Jeff.
Thank you.
You know, we've both been on the road a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And what I don't understand is people in that period who've come and gone and come and gone. Once you realize what's going on in the world, you don't come and go. You keep going.
Well said.
Every minute you can. Here today, gone tomorrow, people, I've seen them come and go. And they can't be genuine, otherwise they wouldn't have gone.
Indeed. Absolutely, indeed. David, go get some rest. Thank you. Talk soon. Take care. Keep up the wonderful work.
Pleasure, Jeff. Thank you very much. Bye.
Okay. Good night. David Icke, and the one and only David Icke. All right. We will be back with you tomorrow night.